Half Past Seven Stories by Robert Gordon Anderson. Chapter 6. To O'Cat. It was hard to be called a kid, harder still to be left out of the game, and besides, it wasn't fair. Marmaduke knew he could catch that ball as well and hit it as often as any of them. This is the way it began. That morning, Jehoshaphat had gone with the toyman to Sawyer's Mill over on Wally's Creek. Marmaduke felt lonely, for there was nobody but Hepzibah to play with, and she wouldn't leave her dolls, and he had long ago gotten past playing with them. As he was wandering forlornly around the barnyard, wondering what he could do, he heard a shout over by the Miller farm. "You're out!" It was a very fascinating cry, and inviting one as well. Looking over the field, he saw boys, at least six of them, playing baseball. So he hurried over to get in the game, too. But his old enemy, Fatty, told him they didn't want any kids hanging around. And Dickie Means agreed with that. "Nah, we don't want any kids." "I can catch, and I can pitch. Curves, too," Marmaduke protested, but they wouldn't believe him. "You can't either," Fatty yelled back. "You'd muff it every time, wouldn't he, Means?" He was talking to Dickie Means, but he called him by his last name just because he had heard grown-up men do that sometimes, and he thought it was very smart. Again, Dickie Means agreed with Fatty. "Sure, he'd muff it every time." Reddy Toms and Harold Skinner didn't take Marmaduke's part, nor did Sammy Soapstone, though he had borrowed Marmaduke's mouth organ and lost it, and had Marmaduke's appendix all pickled in alcohol in a big bottle and wouldn't give it back either. But they were all bigger than Marmaduke, so what could he do but sit on the fence and watch them while his fingers fairly itched to catch one of those flies? And the crack of the bat against the ball did sound so fine across the field. At last, he couldn't stand it, so he got down from the fence and shouted at them. "I wouldn't play in your old game, not for $1,000,000. And off he walked towards his own barn, swinging his arms all the way, as if he were holding a bat and showing them just how well he could play. My! What long flies he would knock if he only had the chance! Over the dead chestnut tree, over the gold rooster on the top of the barn, and even above the long white finger of the church pointing at the sky. Maybe, sometime, if he hit it hard enough and just right, the ball would sail on and up to the moon, and the old man there would catch it and throw it down to him again. But he would have to practice a lot first, so when he reached the house, he went in and found a ball of his own. He turned it over and over in his fingers, admiring it. It was a fine one, with leather as white as buckskin, but very hard, and thick seams sewed in the cover with heavy thread winding in and out in horseshoe curves. It had a dandy name, too. Rocket. That was it. And he threw it up high, up, 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 until it reached the eaves of the barn and startled the swallows, who flew out and swept the sky with their pretty wings, chattering angrily at him. He watched to see where the ball would fall and ran under it, holding his hands like a little cup. It fell into them, but it fell out even quicker than it had fallen in. Jiminy, but that ball was hard! Marmaduke thought the man who made it should have left the et from its name and called it plain rock instead. It was just like a rock covered with hard leather. He tried it again, but he didn't throw it up quite so high. Crack! It went against the side of the barn, and little clouds of hay dust from the loft danced in the air, and the swallows chattered still more angrily. "He persists, sists, they called to one another. This time, the ball fell on his cheekbone and raised a lump as round and as hard as a marble. He didn't cry. Oh, no, for he was trying hard these days to be a regular boy and never to cry even one little whimper. So he just went in the house, and Mother put a kiss and some arnica on it. It is always more effective if mixed that way. And out he came and tried it all over again, for regular boys never give up. Of course, at first he threw the ball a little lower than before, but that was only wise, and this time it did fall into his hands, and he held it tight. Over and over he practiced until his hands were pretty red from catching the hard rocket ball, but he felt very happy inside, which is what counts, for one doesn't mind being sore outside if one is all right within. However, all the time he could hear the sound of that bat over on the Miller lot. Then, all of a sudden, he heard an altogether different sort of noise, more like a crash and a smash than a crack. Glass, that was it. "Hooray!" he shouted in delight. "Now that fatty's going to get it!" But he was wrong. Fatty was too plump to hit a ball so hard. It was Dickie Means that had done it, and like Fatty, he was always up to tricks, only usually Fatty planned them and Dickie did them. Yes, it was Dickie Means who had hit that ball right through Miss Miller's window, the big parlor window, too, and she expected the Methodist ladies of the Labor for Love Society that very afternoon. There was Miss Miller now, running out of the house and shrieking, "You young limboat Satan, you will pay for that!" "Please, Miss Miller, I haven't any money," Dickie was saying very politely, with his eye on the broom she held in her hand. "I'll pay you tomorrow." "No, you'll settle it now," she told him. Very cross she was, too. "Or I'll tell your mother, and your father'll paddle you in the woodshed." Then she added, "And you won't get your ball." Dickie seemed to be more worried about the ball than about the woodshed, for he whined, "Oh, please, Miss Miller, have a heart." You see, "have a heart" was an expression he had heard down in the city, and for the last week the boys had been using it every chance they got. Still, it didn't work on Miss Miller, for she only shook her head angrily and took her broom and shouted, "Scat! Get out!" just as if they were so many cats, "and don't come back for the ball till you come with the money in your hand." And as everybody in the neighborhood used to say, "Gracious, but Miss Miller has a terrible temper," or "Whew, but can't she get mad?" And because she was flourishing that broom right in their faces, why did they scatter like so many cats, just as she had told them. Across the field they all came running, straight towards Marmaduke, who pretended not to see them at all, but just kept passing his rocket ball from one hand to the other, trying to juggle it like the trick men in the circus. When they saw that ball, all the boys suddenly grew very polite to Marmaduke. "Lend us your ball, Marmy," they said. "Wouldn't you like to have it?" he replied, still juggling the ball, but he watched them out of the corner of his eye. They had been pretty mean to him, but he supposed he ought to be decent, even if they weren't, and besides, it would be fine to play a real game with sides instead of one just by himself. "All right," he said, after making them wait long enough to want that ball very much. "If you'll play sides instead of two a cat and let me be captain..." "Aw," said Dickie, "you're not big enough." "All right," replied Marmaduke, still juggling that fine rocket ball. "You'll have to play with some old rock then." "Aw, come on, have a heart." Marmaduke thought it over for a little while. To have a heart was like heaping coals of fire on people's heads, in minister's language, he supposed, and he wasn't so fond of that. But anyway, he gave in. "All right," he agreed. "Come on, where'll we play?" "Here," said Fatty. "This big rock will be home plate, and that one over there by the chestnut tree first, and we'll choose up sides. First choosin'." Then Dickie, who insisted on being the other captain, picked up the bat and threw it with the handle uppermost to Fatty, who caught it around the middle. Then Dickie clasped his fingers around the bat just above Fatty's hand. Then Fatty put his left hand under Dickie's right, and Dickie his left hand next, and so on, till their fingers almost reached the handle of the bat. There was just a little space left. If Fatty could squeeze his plump fingers in between Dickie's and the top, he would win, and he could have first choice of the best players for his side. But his fingers were much too fat. "Your pinky's over," said Dickie, and Reddy Toms picked up a flat stone and scraped it over the top of the bat, and Fatty howled and let go. So it was Dickie's turn to choose, and Marmaduke waited breathlessly. He hoped that he would be chosen first, second, anyway. He ought to be, for wasn't it his ball they were going to play with? But "I will take Reddy," said Dickie. "Sammy," said Fatty. "Skinny," chose Dickie next. "Froggy Waters," chose Fatty. And poor little Marmaduke was left to the last, as if he were the worst player in the whole world. "Well," said Dickie, "I spouse I've got to take him. But he'll lose the game for us." He turned to Marmaduke. "I'll tell you what, Marmee," he said. "You can be the spectators, a whole pile of them, in the grandstand. Wouldn't you like to be a grandstand? That's great, isn't it, fellas?" "Sure," they all said, grinning. But Marmaduke didn't want to be any spectator, nor even a grandstand. He wanted to be doing things, not watching. Lose that game, would he? No, he'd show them. He'd win it instead. He'd hit that ball clean over the fence. So far that they'd never find it. But whew, they wouldn't do it. He'd better not hit it quite so far, or he'd lose his dandy rocket ball. But they had to give in and let him play before he would give them the ball. Then the two captains told their men to take their positions. "I'll pitch," declared Dickie, "and Reddy'll catch. Skinny, you play first, and Marmaduke out in the field. You can go to sleep, too, for all I care, for you won't catch anything, even if you had a peach basket to hold it in." "Play ball," shouted Fatty, and they all took their places. Dickie's team in the field, and Fatty's at the bat. Marmaduke had to stand way out, and he didn't have much to do for a while, for the other team either struck out or hit the ball towards Dickie, the pitcher, or Skinny at first. Once a ball did come his way, "Hold it!" shouted Dickie, but Marmaduke was so excited that he threw himself right at it, and the ball rolled between his legs. "Aw, didn't I tell you?" said Dickie in disgust, and all on the other team shouted, "Butterfingers!" And as every boy in the world knows, it is a great disgrace to be called Butterfingers. When the first inning was over, the score stood 6-5, and Fatty's team was ahead. In the next inning, the ball never once came towards Marmaduke way out there in the field. All he could do was to watch the other boys catch the pop flies, stop the grounders, or run back and forth between first base and home. It was hard, too, when Marmaduke wanted so much to be in the thick of it. Before long, the score stood 17-15, still in favor of Fatty's team. At last they were put out, and it was Marmaduke's turn to bat. If he could only knock a home run, it would bring Skinny in and tie the score. "Strike one," called Sammy, who was catching. Marmaduke swung at the next one too wildly. "Strike two." And then, sad to tell, "Strike three." He was out, no doubt about it. "Aw," exclaimed Dickie, "what'd I tell you? You ought to be fired." Marmaduke felt very much ashamed as he took his place out in the field again with the score 36-30 against them. Just then, the toyman and Jehoshaphat came up the road on their way back from Sawyer's Mill, and the toyman stopped his horses to watch the game for a minute. Marmaduke gritted his teeth and clenched his hands. He would have to do well now when they were looking on. Before he knew it, two of the other team were out. Then all of a sudden, he heard a loud crack. Looking up, he saw the ball sailing through the air. It wasn't sailing towards Dickie or Skinny. It was coming straight in his direction. He formed his hands in the shape of a cup and waited. He was going to hold that ball if it ever got there. And sure enough, it fell in his outstretched hands. My, how that rocket ball stung and burned. But he hung on for dear life. "Butterfingers!" he heard Fatty call to rattle him, and that settled the matter, for if he hadn't heard that word, he might have dropped the ball after all, but he was so determined to make Fatty take it all back that he made his fingers tight as a vise around the ball, and it stayed. It stayed there. When he came in to take his turn at bat, Dickie patted him on the shoulder. "Good boy, Marmee," he said, and outfielder Green felt as pleased and proud as before he had been ashamed. But he felt even happier a little later. It was the last half of the last inning. Reddy and Skinny each made one run, and Dickie made two, and now the score stood 36-35. Fatty's team was only one run ahead, and Dickie was on first with Marmaduke at the bat. Now was Marmaduke's chance to win the game, the chance of a lifetime. Fatty twirled the ball in his hand. Though he was fat, he could pitch like a regular pitcher. At least his motions were just as funny. He would curl up his fingers in a strange way to make what he called a curve. Then he would hold the ball up to his chin and look wisely over at first base, watching Dickie. Then he would curl his arms around his head several times, and at last he would let the ball fly. Marmaduke tried hard to hit it, but he just tipped it. "Foul!" called the catcher. And Marmaduke
missed the next one, and the next. He had only one chance left now, and Fatty twisted himself up almost in knots to make an extra fine curve, I suppose, for Marmaduke's benefit. 6 times he did this before he let the ball go. It came towards the home plate, and Marmaduke as fast as an arrow. He gritted his teeth and gripped his hands tight around the bat and hit at that rocket ball harder than he ever had in his life, and all the time his ears were listening for the crack. Of course, it all happened very quickly, more quickly than we can ever tell about it in words, but to make a long story short, he heard that crack. He had hit it, and away the rocket ball flew towards the dead chestnut tree, up, up, by the old crow's nest, and plop, right in the nest it dropped. And Dickie came racing home, and Marmaduke not far behind him, his face red with excitement and his eyes shining. Oh, how the team cheered him now, and patted him on the back, and said, "Good boy, Marmy," again, and how happy he felt. There was a nice ending to it, too. Although the dandy rocket ball was lost in the old crow's nest. For when he told them about it all at the supper table that night, Father turned to the toyman and, reaching into his pockets where some money jingled, said, "So the home team won, did they? Though they lost the ball? Well, Frank, there are some more dandy rockets where that one came from, aren't there?" The toyman was quite sure there were, and Father added, "And that baseball glove, that big catcher's mitt that Marmaduke always wanted, do you suppose that's still in the store?" Again, the toyman seemed rather hopeful, and the promise was fulfilled on the following Saturday, and many a time the hard rocket ball, and lots of other balls, too, thumped in that big leather mitt. The end of Chapter 6. Read by Rick Kistner for Litigo on the web at fcit.usf.edu.